CF United, the premier Cold Fusion Conference by TerraTech Programming. Created by developers for developers.
I'm going to be talking about going a little bit past the basic SQL use for Cold Fusion today. And you guys are the lucky ones. I'm glad you guys chose to come here instead of some of the other ones. I taught a class on advanced SQL at the beginning of the conference, and I've been excited to get this in because I've got a whole day's worth of material to try and fit into 1 hour. So I took some of the most common uses that you'll need it for to use with Cold Fusion, and we're going to try and cover those today, and hopefully you get some great use out of this. And if there's anything afterwards, we'll save a little bit of room for questions, and if anybody has any specific SQL questions, whatever, I'd be glad to help you out. So we'll save a little bit of room for that at the end. Now our agenda today, we're going to cover some basic SQL standards. I know they're not fun, but everybody's got to mention them. And we're going to talk about most of the topic today is going to be talking about getting what you want from a database. There's a lot more than doing just select star and grabbing out some data. We're going to talk about how to get some useful data out of your tables. And then we're going to talk about some query optimization, how to speed up some of those very slow queries. How many of you can read that? Anybody? If you can, do you enjoy reading it? It's pretty messy, isn't it? Now, that'll work, but it's probably not the right way to do it. It doesn't look great. It makes it awful for anybody who wants to come in and work with it. You look at that and you're just like, what in the world is that doing? You can't tell right off the bat what it's doing. It looks like a mess. And it just gives you a headache, doesn't it? Better change it before you guys start getting mad at me. All right. There we go. Much better? All right, you see what I did here? I hate standing at a podium the whole time, so I'm going to try and speak up as loud as I can. Can everybody in the back hear me okay? Good. Now, you see what I did here? It's the same thing. Much better. All I do is indent a little bit. You know, space it out, make it look nice. And there's not a certain way to indent. It doesn't make anything run faster. There's no one that says you have to do it this way. The way I like to do it, I put my select statement here. You know, whatever you're doing up here with your select statement. And then, you have your from, whatever you're doing here. And then if you're joining things together, I like to tab in a little bit on your joins. And then if you have a where clause down here, tab in a little bit there when you do your ands. It just makes it look nice, and it makes it really easy for anybody else who's maintaining it. And then you also notice how I have mixed capitalization in here. It's not just all lowercase, all uppercase. I know there's different types of SQL platforms. For example, a lot of Oracle people usually use all caps, because at one point you had to do it that way. But the way I like to do it is use mixed case. Use some mixed case, so for example, you got unit price here, capital U and capital T. Much easier to read that way. I like to capitalize my SQL keywords, select from, inner join, on, and then I like to alias on my tables too. Oh, and one thing too, don't name your tables with a space in them. This is from the Northwind database that comes with a SQL server. And if you did have a table that had a space in it, that's how you use it. Use full descriptive words, not abbreviations where possible. Don't have a table that's named A or something that's named, something you can't understand. Make it descriptive. You can have a table name that had 200 characters in it if you wanted to. You probably wouldn't want to get it that high. But if you have enough, you can make it very descriptive. If you have something that stores product details, name it product details. If you have something that stores shopping cart info, name it, cart info or whatever you want to do. Just make it so it's descriptive so you can tell what's in there just by looking at it. Field names are usually going to be singular. Table names are usually going to be plural. For example, you've got a field that has, if you're storing somebody's credit card numbers in a database, which if you do, make sure you're secure about it. But if you do, you're not going to name the field credit card numbers. You're going to name it credit card number. And then the table that it might be in might be orders. And it'll be a little more plural. So if you have more than one in the table, more than one rows in the table, usually one field in the field. If you use views or stored procedures, I like to name them, I like to prefix them with either a V or like a USP to show what they are. If you use views with, and I wish we had enough time to cover views and stored procedures and triggers and all that today, but hopefully some of you have had a chance to go to some of the other database classes to talk about using triggers and stored procedures and views. Now, if you do use views, I like to put a V in the front of it, because as far as like SQL Server sees it or any of those databases, they look like a normal table. And depending on where you're getting your information from, you look at it, it can appear like a normal table. You put a V in front of it, that just says, hey, this is a view. It groups them all together, makes it easy to read. Stored procedures. Now, especially in SQL Server, it comes with a lot of built-in stored procedures, system stored procedures. And they always start with ST underscore. So when I build stored procedures myself, I'll make them either UST underscore or UST, the name of the procedure. Just whatever you do, don't name them with ST underscore in front of them. Because if you happen to make one that already has a system stored procedure existing in the master database, then it may use that one over yours. Just a very simple naming convention. I like to put USP in front of them, and when you look at your stored procedures, it groups them all together, makes them easy to understand. And I use case consistency. That's where I've shown you, keep your SQL keywords either in upper or lower. There's no wrong or right way to do it. The most important way is to pick a way that you like to do it. If you don't like holding down the shift key every time you put SQL keywords in, you know, fine, just pick a way that you like to do it and keep it, you know, stay consistent. Stay consistent, it really helps a lot. All right, enough of the boring stuff. We're gonna get into talking about getting what you want from a database. Joining tables. There's two different ways to join tables. Most ColdFusion developers who have not worked directly with a SQL platform very much usually do it this way. It's a pretty common way to do it. You list your tables out and then you join them together on the where clause. If you have been doing it that way and haven't heard of this way, sometimes this way can be a little shorter. As you can see, this is the same join, and this is a little bit longer. However, this is called the ANSI SQL version. And eventually, I've heard rumors, I don't know if it's for sure or not, but I've heard rumors that this version may eventually not work in some future SQL platforms. Yes?
It certainly doesn't work on MySQL 5.
There you go. So MySQL, and MySQL 4.1 it did.
Yeah.
So in MySQL 5, this way doesn't work anymore. So you have to go to the ANSI SQL version, the ANSI SQL 99 and 92 version, and this is how you do it. The difference is, if you haven't seen it before, you've got it from your first table. It leaves it out, you don't have to, but it makes it much easier to do. In a join, whatever type of join you're doing here, there's many different types. We'll talk about those here in a second. In a join, the next table, on, and this is what you want to join it on. In a join, the next table, on, and this is what you join it on. And as you can see, I have these aliases out. I'm joining e.employeeID, where e is this table, et.employeeID, et is this table. So that joins those two tables together, makes a SQL query from more than one table at a time. It does it the same way as doing it this way, but if you haven't seen this format before, start using this. Because as this gentleman put it out here, the new version of MySQL doesn't even allow this anymore.
Question?
Yes?
Is the method faster?
I personally have not found a performance difference. If you had really large tables, maybe it would be something to test and see if it ran faster. I personally don't know if there is a performance difference. I've never seen one myself. It's mainly naming convention, and it makes it easier for the database to understand what you're doing on. So in a certain circumstance, it may make it faster, but I've never actually tested to see if it does or not. I've never noticed anything where it did. So don't count on that speeding it up. But we'll talk about other ways to speed up your queries.
Is this on your website?
Oh yeah, great question. Let me actually show you where that's at real quick. Okay, on my website, because if you notice, my presentations are not in the materials. So I have, on my website, just go to zententia.com, zententia.com. And then down here, Beyond Basic SQL for CF, click here to download, and you'll get all the code and the presentation in there all at one time. So go grab that whenever you want. Outer joins. Has anybody here used outer joins before? Great, so almost half. So is there anyone who's never heard of an outer join before? Or anyone who's heard of them and never known how to use them or known, you know, exactly what to do? Well, I'm going to show you that here right now and show you the use for them and how to do it. They can appear kind of tricky and seem intimidating at first, but they're really not difficult. Once you do them the first time, it's like, oh, it's easy. And there's very good uses for them sometimes too. The main use, you can return all records, even if the record's not found in the related table. For example, you have a parent table and a child table, and some parents don't have kids in the child table, but you want to join the two tables together, and if you join them together using an inner join, the parents who don't have kids now don't show up in your results. Maybe you want that, maybe you don't. Maybe you want to see everybody. Maybe you want to find out who's in the child table that's not in the parent table. Or if you're trying to find any orphans, or maybe you want to find out exactly who's in the parent table that doesn't have any children. You use outer joins to do that kind of information. Now, they can be used to return what records, yeah, like I said, don't have related information in the table. There's three different types of outer joins. There's a left, right, and a full. And we'll show all those here in a second. Left outer join. The difference between left and right is literally if you are looking at the SQL statement, whatever is left or right of the join syntax. It's that easy. So you see here I have a query. I'm selecting some information from a customer's table. And I'm going to left outer join customer demo on customer IDs. And what that does by making it a left outer join, that makes customers the controlling table. So if there's customers that do not have information in the customer demo table, then they will still show up because customers is the controlling table. If I switch that to be a right, can anybody tell me what they think might happen? Come on, you guys. You guys are brave. That's right. It'll make customer demo the controlling table. And what will happen, if you've got 20 customers and only 3 of them have had demos, then the person who got an all point will show up, and I'll show you what happens, how it looks if they don't have information in the related table. And if you made it a right outer join, what that does is it now makes this one the controlling table, and you now get 3 records back. So it acts kind of like an inner join in a way. Don't look at it as the same thing, because there are certain circumstances where you'll get different information there. Especially because this one we're only doing 2 tables. Now if you wanted to outer join more than one table here, you do that just the same as I showed before. You keep doing it. And you can have different types of joins in the same query. Just be careful on how you do it, because you might get strange results if you're not careful. A full outer join will return all records. We'll just dump them all out regardless of what you're doing. Yes?
What's the difference between a full join and a cross join?
There's not really much difference. They pretty much run the same way. They have the same performance speed. I just use full because I like to use it. I've never actually ran into a certain circumstance where I need to use one or the other. So they're pretty much the same thing. All right, let's look at some joins real quick. Can everybody see that okay? All right. Here's the basic join. If you're wondering what I'm using here, this is Query Analyzer. I'm using SQL Server 2000. And this type of syntax will work in MySQL as well, if you're wondering. Now, here's one join we talked about. This is just going to join these two tables together. I do an inner join. Here's what I get. Let me... Here's the information I get here. Just joining them together. It's going to sum and taking fields from two different tables and joining them together. I want to get the employee's first name, last name, title, and find out what territory they're in, too. The only way to do that is to join the two together. Now, here's the same join. This is the method that most developers use who have not worked with the database before. You can see it gets the exact same information out. And here you can see they run exactly the same speed, but we're not working with a large set of data either. That would be an interesting test if someone's actually tested this before on a very, very large table to see if they run differently, or someone wants to. I'd be glad to hear if it does make a big difference or not. I haven't seen one myself, but it'd be interesting to see if it does. Now, like I said here, if you've been using this one in the past, start using this one. Now, the next one, outer join. I'm going to do a left outer join, and you can see I've got a where clause commented out here. I didn't show you that on the slides. So I'm just going to left outer join these two tables. And you can see most of these customers don't have any information in here, so it comes up as a null value. And then let's see, I think there's one in here that does. So here's one, you can see they have got one in there. So there shows up, there's one. The rest of them, they don't have one, so it shows up as null. All right, now if I add a where clause on it, so what if I only want to get, if I only want to find out whose is null? I want to find out who does not have information in this table. There's two different ways to do it. You know, the old way, if you're scared of using outer joins or don't understand them, most people will use a where clause and say where not in and then select all the records from the tables, and it's not a good way to do it. It's a very slow way to do it. You know, it'll work. It's definitely a much slower practice to do that. This is a much quicker way to do it, and it'll get you exactly what you want. All you do is you add a where clause on there and say where customer ID is null or is not null. And what that's going to do is that will give me back the ones who do not have information in that table. So you can see now I've got 89 rows instead of 91. There was two of them that had data in there. And you can change this and say is not null. And you get the two. Here is another way of doing it. Some of you who, there's another method that some of you may have seen, and it goes like, it's like you combine the tables in a from, like I have here, and then if I want to do an outer join, you put an asterisk there. That's another method of doing the outer join, but that's similar to this type of syntax. You know, try and stay away from that if you can. So if you do see a query that has that in it, that's what it's doing. It's doing a left outer join. If I have the asterisk on this side, it's a right outer join. You want to change your syntax to look like this. What's that? She asked, why should you stay away from that method? This is a method that eventually is going to be away. It's going to be predicated in most SQL platforms. And for example, MySQL 5, in MySQL 4.1, I know for a fact this worked, doing a join this way. MySQL 5, it doesn't anymore. And that's, I've heard a rumor that in 2005 it still works, but I've heard a rumor that in some of the next versions of SQL Server it may not work as well. Yeah, so they're already being predicated. All right, and here's a write outer join. So if I write outer join these two tables together, anyone tell me what's going to happen? Am I going to get 89 records, or am I going to get two? Two. Yep. That's right. So it's almost the same thing as doing it this way and saying where it is not null. Almost worked the same way there. Here's a full outer join. It's just going to give me everybody. You could also use like a cross join or a left join, and that would also give you all the information there too. Before I go on to the next thing, does anybody have any questions about joins? No, it works the same way. You're just kind of, it's, sometimes you may think it's easier to just make it write outer join. Maybe it's easier to see, but as far as the database sees it, it does the same thing. Can you repeat your question? Actually, a good reference. Look for, if you have SQL Server installed, like a personal edition or something like that, hit F1 in your Enterprise Manager and look on Books Online. That has a lot of information there. Another one, if you can actually look for Books Online on Microsoft's website. Just search for SQL 2000 or 2005 Books Online, or install SQL 2005 Express Edition. It's free, and that comes with some great documentation on using joins. As far as some website that explains it, there's not a real particular one I use. I prefer to use Books Online. It's got a lot of good information in it. Yes, question over here. In this circumstance, no. Yeah, in this way, it works the same way. There may be certain circumstances where they may be different. For example, if you're doing more than one table, that might be one. Yes. Mm-hmm. In this case, yes. In this case, the customer ID is one of the primary keys of the table. So that is saying the row is not there. In some cases, you may have IDs, more than one ID in one table, and it may not be an ID that is always required, that may be null or not null. But in this case, in this specific table that I'm working with, it requires that the customer ID be there. So when I say customer ID is null, that means the record's not there.
So it's synonymous.
What's that?
So synonymous.
That's right. It'll work the same way as doing like a not in. And as I'm going to show here in a minute with an optimization technique, that's something you want to try and stay away from. You know, use outer joins if you want to get information that's not in another table. Try and use outer joins. It'll be much quicker. That's right. Yep. Yep. So if you go look, there's only two rows in that table. Does that help everybody kind of understand there? Two rows in that one, and then there's 91 in the other one. So that's where the joins come from. Yes.
Once I never use select star, and the other one says always use select star.
Mm-hmm. There are certain times when you do and don't want to use them. I usually don't use them. If I'm doing something real quick, just like that, you know, just to see what's in there, I may use it. But in an actual application, I'd prefer not to do it because depending on the platform you're using and the size of records, it may take longer because especially if you only need two fields out of that table and it's got 20 fields in it, that means you're selecting back all that data when you only need two of them. So when you're doing a select, actually put the fields in there you need. That's the way I usually always do it. The only times you might want to is if you're working with a table you know may eventually change, and you may be doing something dynamic with the columns or fields in that table. For example, if you're putting it out onto a grid, and you want to know ahead of time, okay, if this table ever changes, if anybody ever adds a field to it, I want to make sure it still shows up in my grid, then you don't have to go back and change your code. So that's a time when you may want to. All right, next, wildcards. Most of you have used a wildcard. Anytime you put a search function in, you make a query that says select something from something where last name like, and then a percent or something like that. There is a lot more you can do with wildcards than that. That's the most simple use of them, and there's a lot more available than that. You can do some really, really great searching techniques on these. Let me show you a couple of them. Percent, this is just a keyword most of you know. You can put the percent. You can put the percent either on this side or that side. It's going to make it look from the left to the right and say where. So if you just want to say if someone's name was Adam, it would show up in there. Now, if you use the underscore, ignore the check marks on the left. That's just for use on the slide. The check marks have nothing to do with the code itself. If you use an underscore, that matches a single character. And I'll show you some examples of all these so you can understand a little better. So it's kind of like a placeholder. So if you wanted to get something, if you wanted to specifically look for something where like the first two letters were blank and then the third letter started with something, you can do that. I'll show you how to do that. And if you put in brackets, you can use some simple methods of regular expressions. I'm not sure how far you can go with regular expressions, but anything I've needed to do, I've been able to do in there. Just by putting the brackets and then put your regular expression in there. Here's some very simple ones. X, Y, Z. What that does is it looks for anything that has X, Y, or Z in it, just by putting them next to each other. And it doesn't have to be X, Y, Z like in next to each other. They have to fit. It sort of have, if any word's got an X in it, it'll show up. And if it's got a Y in it, it'll show up. If it's got both, it'll show up. Match from A to Z. That's a great one there. If you wanted to look for only A through M of like a phone book or something like that, you could do that. Just put A dash M in your brackets. And if you wanted to say anything not X, Y, Z, or in this case, Z, Y, Z, excuse my error there, then you would put a caret X, Y, Z. And this one, match any character not between A and Z, put a caret, and then A, Z, that just says not. And in Microsoft Access, if you're using Access, a asterisk or a question mark are equivalent to those.
Were you matching those characters to the brackets except for the one character?
And she says, where you're matching the characters in the brackets, is that for one character? And what do you mean by that, ma'am?
If you have the bracket XYZ, is that only for just one character?
That's looking for any character.
A number of characters?
Yeah, so if something's got 3x in it, it'll show up. If it's got 5z in it, it'll show up. It's just saying, give me anything that has an x or a y or a z.
So it's saying at least one.
Yeah, at least one.
At least one of the following.
Perfect. Yeah, very good. Yeah. All right, let's look at some examples.
Is that right across database platform, like Oracle, SQL, MySQL, they all have that?
Yes. Yes, they do.
Is the regular description like x, y, z? Yeah. You're saying it's more like if you say a bracket x, y, z, or would you say where it is like it contains, where you could say where my field a is x, y, z?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So you wouldn't do like a percent and then put this here. I'll show you a SQL statement with this in it. You would just have this in it, and it just says, give me anything that has at least one of the following characters in it. XYZ or ABC. Maybe you just want to find, you know, A or B. Just put AB then. Yes?
You said on the A through Z,
uh-huh,
example, the total of A through M.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like you're talking about the initial character, whereas the one above it's not, so they're handled differently.
Mm-hmm. This one I'm not. This one I'm actually talking. In this case right here, it's actually going to be just anything that has an A through an M in it, anywhere.
So
if you wanted to make it the first character, you could put a percent sign in it. And that would make it the first character. Yes?
What if you're actually trying to look for a percent sign?
If you're actually trying to look for a percent sign? It's a good question. You put 2% signs. 2% signs next to each other. Or you escape it out. And I haven't actually tried to look for a percent sign. Has anybody here tried to look for a percent sign? In it? Yeah, maybe we'll try and do that real quick and forget a couple minutes and see exactly how you do that. If we don't get a chance to do it, make sure to send me an email and I'd be glad to look it up for you. I've never actually had to do that. Yeah?
I had a similar issue, but with a single quote.
Uh-huh.
So you just double up a single quote, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so if you're looking for a single quote, that's something I know I've had to do before, and you actually would escape that out by putting, you double up the single quote next to each other. So, and then it'll know that it's only that one. Oh, here's something real quick I wanted to show you guys. This wasn't in my slides, but this is a neat little trick some of you may not have seen before. If you want to randomly select from a table, just randomly get something in there, like if you're doing like a lottery or something like that, you want to randomly select from a table. You don't have to make some complex randomized function. Just add on the end of your query, order by, new ID. And I'm not sure if this is cross-platform, like it'll work in Oracle and that, but this definitely works in SQL Server. So order by new ID, and what that's going to do is it will tell it, give me a random output of that, and it'll completely randomize it. It'll give you the whole table, how many ever you want. If you only wanted one, you'd put a top one, yeah. But it'll just randomize the output there. Yeah. So here's some matching. Here's more information here. 8%, that's the one we've most seen. And this was, to your question here, if you want to make it like a phone book, in the slide, it just has A through M. So if you just had A through M, it would look for any of the following characters, A through M, anywhere in the name. So that probably wouldn't do you a whole lot of good. But if you wanted to get something like a phone book and just get anything that starts with A through M, that's how you do it. You can combine those things.
Question.
Or like that. Yes? It is. It is case sensitive, yes.
So that depends on the database?
It would depend on the database, yeah. Very good point. So it's case sensitive depending on the database. If your database is not case sensitive, then this isn't going to be. So if you've got SQL Server, and I think by default it's not case sensitive, in some instances you can actually turn that on and make it case sensitive. So if your database is case sensitive, then this is going to be. If it's not, then it's not going to be. And here's another example. Select all where it's not. Ethereum. Let's run a couple of these to see what they look like. So that's looking at the first name, Andrew, Ann. Now if I do this, Andrew and Ann are still going to come up, right? And then along with anybody else, as you can see, A through M. Now, if we did this, Robert shows up. You can do it this way, and it's going to get it where there's anything else in there. It's looking at the last name, and it's going to say where the last character is, A through M. Not a whole lot of times when you probably really want to do that, but you never know. Between using like and what? And using contains. If you're only using like to see if it has one of the following characters in it, then contains will work the same way. However, when you're using contains, it's looking for a string. So if you say where something contains and you put the string there, it's gonna look for that, match that exact string anywhere in your data. If you wanna add the regular expressions on and do some of these cool tricks, then you use like. Now here's one I told you about, the underscores. This can be useful sometimes too. See, Steven shows up here. The way that works is for each underscore, see I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 underscores. So you've got 4 underscores, S, T, E, and V, and then E, N. So the underscore is like a placeholder, and then it says, okay, so now, so if I did this, then he'll still show up. Does that make sense? Cool. Like, like that, or whatever you wanted there. And this one, as I said, that's just going to get A, S, and M. So anything that has any of this stuff in there, it's saying where it's not like A, S, and M. So you can also do it that way too. It does the same thing. Yeah. It does the same thing. However, if I'm using it, I like to make it all like and then put it here. Because if anybody else comes around and changes it, you know, they can see exactly what it's doing there. It may be easier. But it does the same thing though. It'll give you back the exact same info. And here's another way, you know, this is the most common way. The in, you know, in can, try and avoid using in if you can. In's one of those things that sometimes you have to use it, sometimes it's easier to use it. You know, if you're just doing some queries and some debugging or troubleshooting or whatever, and you want to use it on your own time, you know, great, use whatever you're comfortable with, whatever you can write the fastest. However, in a production application, try and avoid using in if you can. It's one of the slower predicate functions there. Not the slowest, but if you can avoid it, try to. What's that?
How would you find those two names without it?
You could use an or.
Oh, so where first name is Nancy?
Equal to Nancy, or first name equal to, yeah.
So that's better.
Yeah. Yeah, if you've got a list of 10, then that's when you got to use in. You know, those are the times when you do have to use them. I use them myself when I need to. But if there's a circumstance when you don't have to do it, then don't. For example, like the most common one here, and I've had to do this many times myself, you'll put another select statement here, like a subquery here. There is other ways of doing that. One of them that can be faster is using exists. This one can definitely be faster than using in, because what it's doing is it's going to run the first query first. It's going to run this query first, and then it's going to say exists, and so basically the database just has to say yes or no. Does it exist? Does it not? You don't have to worry about, it doesn't actually have to look in and look at each one of them. So there is certain times when exists can be faster. And I'm not saying don't ever use in. Sometimes you have to, and sometimes it's the easiest way to do it. And you don't want to if you've got, you know, more than 2 or 3 things you're looking for, if you're looking for like 7 or 8 different names, it would be very clumsy to say first name equal to this, or first name equal to this, or first name equal to this, like 7 or 8 times, so that's when you use an in. It's not going to hurt you in that circumstance. If you've got a stored procedure that's running slow, or a certain query that's running slow, you know, look for those kinds of things. If it's using an in, maybe there's a different way to do it. Maybe you can put it in a stored procedure and use a temp table, you know, and then use an outer join. There's different ways to do those things that can really speed things up. If you're dealing with small amounts of data, you won't notice a difference. If you're dealing with a large amount of data, there's definitely a lot of ways to speed those things up. That's right. Yeah. The subquery is going to run the same for both of these. His question was, why is exists faster than in this case? In this case, because I'm dealing with a small amount of data, it's going to be the same. And this example is not a very good example because I could do that without using a subquery, but I'm just showing how to do it. Now, the reason why exists is going to be faster sometimes than in is because both in and exist are going to run this query first. And this one is, they're both going to return data. And this one's going to say, now look where our first name in, and then it's actually going to do the search. And it's going to say, you know where the first name is in any of these. And this one is just going to say exists. And it'll do kind of a search, but on the database side, it's a Boolean, it's a yes or a no. So in certain circumstances, it can be faster. It just says, does it exist, does it not exist? Yes? That's right, yeah. So in those certain circumstances, you could use a write, add, or join. Perfect. All right, let's check out some aggregate functions. Has anybody here ever used aggregate functions? Good, yeah, most of you. Especially like count. Everybody's used count. That's a very common one. There's a few other ones available. Average, max, min, sum, count. They're pretty much self-explanatory. This one gets the average for that column, the max for that column, min, sum. And they're great because it does all the math for you. It'll do the calculation and give you the math. How many of you enjoy trying to limit data with those aggregate functions or combine them and have three or four different aggregate functions in there? It can be kind of challenging sometimes if you're not perfect with your syntax, you get errors coming back saying, like if you want to select other data in there too. If you want to also, I want to return the average, the max, the min, the sum, the count, and I also want the product name. And you're going to get an error back, come back and say, no, this isn't an aggregate function. It must be included in an order by or group by. You keep getting those errors. So it can be kind of challenging working with them. We're going to cover them real quickly here today. It's nothing challenging. Just make sure you understand them. You can use more than one to query. This is an example here. I've got select count, average, min, max, and sum, all in the same query. And it'll do each of those calculations and return them for me. Now make sure if you're doing these queries and you want to use them in ColdFusion, you alias them. If you don't use, what I mean by alias, I say as. If you don't use an alias, then you won't be able to pull it out in ColdFusion because it doesn't have a column name. It'll just see it as blank and you can't do anything with it. You can group aggregate data together. This is a perfect example of when you do this. I'll run this query here in a second so you can see it. I've got products and I've got products that are stored in categories. And I want to find by category the average count, min, max, and sum of all the products in there, all the product prices that are in there. And to do that, you would join the two tables together and then group by category name and then select category name. If you don't put the group by here, can anybody tell me what's going to happen?
Error.
Error. Yeah, you get an error. It won't run. Because it doesn't know it needs to group by to do the aggregate. So what it's going to do is it will actually group by a category name. So every time the category name changes, it'll run these aggregate functions. So you'll get the aggregate functions based on that group only. And any field in the select, if you want more information, any field you put in the select statement, any information you want out there, you have to have in the group by also, or you'll get an error return. So what you do is if you wanted to also get category description or whatever, you just put comma and add it to the group by. If you want to limit that aggregate data, like, for example, I want to get the categories that have less than 10 products in them, and I want to count them out. I want to count it out, too. So I want to do a group and aggregate function here. And maybe I want more information, maybe I want to also get the average cost or whatever. Maybe I want to limit it by the average cost. Then to limit it, you have having at the end, after the group by, having, and then you put the aggregate function again, having count product that is greater than 10. This is a great tool for debugging. For example, if you've got duplicate records in the table and you want to find what records have duplicate records, you can do this way. If I wanted to find, if we're doing it at one table, so if I had just a products table and I wanted to find duplicate product IDs, if product ID wasn't your primary key and you were allowing duplicate product IDs and somehow code wasn't working right or whatever and it put duplicate IDs in there, you could use this to find out the duplicates. I use that a lot. I mean, every time I'm trying to do some data cleanup and there's duplicates in the table, this is the best way to do it. It makes it so much easier. And all you do is you just do a, just ignore the join here, and just select product ID, comma, count product ID from products, having group by product ID, having count product ID greater than 1. And what that will do is it will give you back any products that have more than 1 product ID in that table.
Can you use the where instead of that?
No. It'll return an error. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly why, but if you do want to put a where clause on here, you have to use having. Yes.
I noticed in the having that you're not using the alias. Is that because the query doesn't know about the alias?
Yeah. The query, all that does is it gives you an alias so you can use it.
Outside.
Yeah. So you can use it outside the query. It makes it the column name. So if you're returning a result set, then that'll be what the column name says.
So you never refer to that in the query.
So. Yeah, yeah. So if you want to do a having, then you got to put it again.
You can still use a where clause in the select portion, right?
What's that?
You can still use a where clause in the select portion, correct?
There are certain circumstances you can and certain ones you can't. If I tried to do it in this example, I would get an error. There are certain times when you can. So, and I don't have all those examples here, but if you do need to do that for some reason, you know, make sure to get my email address, and I'd be glad to show you when you can and when you can't. All right, let's look at this real quick. Here's some aggregates. Here's a simple one most of us have used. Just the average price in that column. It'll give me back an average price. If I've got more than one, doing this, as you can see, it does all the math for me and tells me there are 77 products, average price, min price, max price, total price. It's pretty nice. Just by doing a simple query, it does all the work for you. And aggregate functions have been around for a little while, and the database platforms have done a great job of speeding them up. So they do run very quickly. There are certain times when it may slow things down because it is doing math, and if you've got a lot of data in there, it can slow it down. But they do run pretty good, though. Yes?
You write a query that would return the product ID that has, for example, the highest unit.
Yeah. Yeah, you could. You could say, I think I might even have an example here that does it. Let me show you this one real quick. This is great. This is perfect for reports. I've had to do this exact same query here. And I want to get all my categories of products and get the details for those. Get their average price, get the min price, max price, total price, and it gives me back the counts. And this is how you do it. And it actually, I mean, remember there were 77 products here? And when it does those aggregate functions, it does the average, the min, the max, total price. It's not doing them on all of them. It's only doing them for that group because I told it to group by. Yes?
Do you like to order by product count descending or something?
Yeah, yeah. You can do that. You can add an order by on there, definitely. And his question was, can you put a, like, where and find out what has the max price in it? You do that by using a where clause. And not you. That's the time when you'd use a where clause, and not.
What do you write in the where clause? You can't use the max. You can't use an aggregate function in the where
Yeah, yeah, you can. You would do it with a subquery.
Can you just do where class equals max prices?
Like that. Does that make sense?
Okay.
And that would give you, that's a good way of doing that information. Now here is, if you want to limit it, now let me show this real quick, this group I, the one I just showed you. Like I showed you here before, you got your aggregates on here, and then you put category name up here, group by category name. And that's how I got that report out that gave me my aggregate functions by each group. Now if I want to limit those, so I do that, having product count less than 7. And if I want to say where the cost is greater than 100, I don't know if there's any in here that are greater than 100 or not. Actually, I think I've got that one right here. Yeah, so if I want to do this,
category name and then sum of the unit price, and I want to find out where the sum of the unit price is.
Any product that has a sum less than 200 in that category, then that'll give me those back. So if you want to limit it that way, that's the way you do it. Now here's a quick little optimization technique, and I'm showing these along the way because the last part of this, I'm going to show you some optimization before this gets over. Now, here's one for example. In this case, I want to do my group by report, but I only care about one category. So I'm going to put a having on here and beverages. I just want to find out what beverages looks like. And an example of this may be if you've got a list of all the categories and you've got a button there, they can say, give me a report on this category. They push a button, a report comes up, and it gives you this report, but it only does it for this category. In that circumstance, this will work the same way. It's a little more extreme method of speeding up your queries, and only do it if you have a lot of data and you know it's running slower. And by doing it this way, I actually said select beverages, and that's actually the same as what you see here in the where clause. And the reason I can do that, I'm actually putting the literal text here. So the reason you can do that is because you know, no matter what, when you're saying having category name beverages, that is always going to be beverages. So instead, you can say select beverages, and by doing that, it makes it so you don't have to have a group by. It makes it so you can just say beverages, and then you can say from products join where category name equal beverages. And then you don't have to have a group by on there. And it will give you the exact same value. Yeah?
Forget the alias beverages so you can address
it. Yeah, good point. Yeah. Yeah, you do. So the question was, if you want to do output this, you'd have to alias it. Now, this is going to give you the exact same result as that. And the reason it runs faster is because if you've got a lot of data and you're telling it to group over that data, it can slow it down. Doing this and eliminating the group by can greatly speed it up. It looks kind of weird, and you look at it first and you're like, what's that guy trying to tell me to do? And it's kind of a more extreme method of speeding things up. And I wouldn't recommend always doing this, but if you get into a scenario where something's running slow and you want to, and it's using a group by on here, and it happens to be this circumstance where the category name is always the same, then that one might be a solution for that problem.
Can you see a query grill?
What's that?
Can you see a query grill to put that right here? To put beverages in the select statement?
Right here you can, but not there.
Not there.
Yeah. Yes?
Can we use aggregates across multiple columns in the same record, or is that just bad data?
You can. You can, but you could probably get away from doing it too. But yeah, you could do it. I mean, if you had a circumstance where you needed to find out, I want to find the min, the max, the average of all the same columns, then yeah, you can do that. There's nothing wrong with doing it. So before we go on to Something else, anybody have any questions about this? Yeah, one more.
I have a question about the previous topic. Okay. Now, was there problems on composite subqueries with composite columns?
Okay.
Like if I have, I'll try to use something, like we have an account number and a unit number at one table, and an account number and a unit number at a different table, and you want to do a subquery on both those matching. I guess you would use exist. I usually use, sometimes, especially when I was a beginner, I would use in, and I would try to combine them via concatenation, which is probably
bad. You can use correlated subqueries. If you want to stick around for a few minutes after, I'd be glad to show you.
Right.
I'll do that. All right, the next thing I'm going to show you guys, this is a great tool. This is something, when I first found out about this, I got mad. Because I think of all the times I did this manually. Has anybody ever tried to nest a CF output? So a couple people. So there's going to be a few of you that are going to be mad now. you can nest CF outputs in certain circumstances. And it started with, it was all the way back to version 4.5, I believe. Now, when you do this, you've got a query, and you got whatever your query is. Say you want to spit out your data, and you want to group it. You want to group it by department name. So you want something to look like this. You want a report to look like that. Is anybody trying to build that report manually? A few of you have. Yeah, I remember when I was first developing, I did, and then I got mad when I found out you can do it this way, and it does all the work for you. And the way to do that, I'll show you here. I've got my query. That's how you do it. That's all I used to make that report. And what you do a CF output query, alphabetical query, group. You say the name of the group. And what that's going to be is, see how I've got order by on the end of my select statement? Make sure you use order by and match the group name. So, and you can nest these. So if I want to do department name and then title or something like that, and then you can put people, you can do it that way. And if you do, make sure you do order by department name, order by title. Make those match, and it'll help the performance there. Because it's less work Cold Fusion has to do. Now, when you do this, I'm saying group by department name, and then I have my department name here, and then I have CF output again, and then output my data. What that's going to do is it's going to run this inside here for each group one time. And then when you get here and you say CF output, it's going to spit out the rest of the data related to that group. When it's done, it's going to go back up to the next group. It does it all for you automatically. And you can nest these as far down as you want to go. If you've got a report that says, I want to group it by country, by state, by city, by zip code, you can do that. And you can nest it, you know, as many times as you want. I don't think there's a limit of how many you can do. I mean, when you get further down, it may slow it down. But you can nest it several times if you want to. Yes?
So are you saying that second CF output is looping?
Yep. It is.
Because typically you get an error, but typically all that would do is turn out one.
Yeah, if you do this, and the only time you can nest CF outputs is if you have a group on this top CF output. Or if you had two of them in here, and then your third one. When you use the CF output without a group in it, that's when you want it to loop over the rest of the data related to that group. And what this is going to do is it's going to actually loop this for every row that's in that group, and then it's going back to the next group. As you can see, here's my, that right there, that's what it did. So the group I did went here, and then I can see its output, and I did those, next group. It's pretty cool. And then real quickly, since we're getting close to running out of time, let me show you some quick optimization techniques. Here's one real quick. This is a kind of a different one. There's something called SARGs, simple search arguments. If you've got something where you're saying, if you've got a list of students and there's 100,000 students in there, and you also have a table that stores students that need rides, and both of those tables have the same field in them. They both have town. Now, one way of doing it, here's
And the reason why I show this type of joint is because if you're going to do this, you use this type of joint here. Now, be careful with this because I'm not sure on some of the on MySQL 5 or some of the newer versions if this is still going to work or not. But on some of the older ones, it definitely does work, and it will speed up your data quite a bit. It's kind of weird when you look at it. Now, here, what you do is you join the town, and you say, where my town equal Denver. Well, this one is doing the exact same thing without joining the records together. All I did was I said, where r.town equal Denver. And the reason I did r is because rides, if there's 100,000 students, and then there's a table that stores students that need rides, maybe 20,000 of those students need rides. There's less data in that one, so it's going to run this one first. Now I've got 20,000 records to work from. And then I'm going to say where, out of those records, what ones are Denver? It's a lot quicker. If I have to do it this way, then it's going to join 100,000, and it's going to join 100,000 records to the 20,000, and then it's going to join, and then it's going to find out what town it is, so it can really slow it down. Another way of doing that is like this, on your joints. When you, or even in, whether it's a join or whether it's just a regular query, if you just have from your students and you want to find out all the students in Denver that are female, well, you may not really think about it. You may just say, well, gender equal female, we're town equal Denver. You may not really worry about it. But in certain times, especially when you're dealing with a lot of data, it will greatly speed it up if you change the word clause. And you say, we're town equal Denver, and we're gender equal female, by using the most restrictive one first. For example, if you've got 100,000 students, maybe 50,000 of them are female. And maybe out of those 50,000, 10,000 of them live in Denver. You do it this way, where town equal Denver, now you're down to 10,000. And then you say, well, those are female. So by using the most restrictive one first, you can speed up your query performance. Use caution with the input, like I told you before. Avoid unions if you can. With most nested queries, you can get away with them by flattening out and making joins or outer joins. Sometimes you have to use nested queries. Sometimes they're great tools. If you can, try and avoid them. And use caution when sorting. And when I say sorting, I don't mean order by. Order by is not that big of a deal. But using group by or having, sometimes those can slow things down. Here's an example of when you might use a union and you don't need to. Here's a union. I'm going to select from personnel where work equal New York. I'm going to union that to click from personnel where home equals Chicago. You can do it the same way just by doing it, or, you know, sometimes you may, you know, you keep it simple, sometimes you may not really think, and it's like, oh, how can I do this? And you think of the most complicated way to do it, and you do it the most complicated way. And it'll work both ways, but you don't need to do it that way. An example of when you may need to use a union is if you've got, you're joining two tables together, and some of the fields have the same data, but the field names are different. That may be a time when you do need to use a union. But if you can get away from it, try to. You can usually get away from it by using temporary tables, like in a stored procedure or in a query browser. You can make temporary tables and you can get all your data in there. You don't have to use unions. Here's another example of not having to use group by. And I showed you this before, where you just actually put a little text in here and then say
the where clause. All right, we got to stop here in a second. We'll show one thing I want to make sure you guys see. Cached queries. Yeah, that's definitely something I want you guys to see. Optimizing your data with ColdFusion. Using cached queries. If you have a query that, like this, for example, if you're returning states or countries, something like that, you know they're not going to change. Cache your query, cache it for a day at a time. And what that means is when that query is cached, the first time you use it, it'll hit the database. After that, once that query is cached, it won't hit the database again. You want to try to limit the number of times you hit the database. For example, if you've got a page that has 50 queries on it, doing one process, combine those queries and put it in a stored procedure so that in your ColdFusion code, you've got one query calling the stored procedure. Eliminate the times you can hit the database can really, really, really speed up your performance. And caching these, and even if you've got something that doesn't change very often, like product information, for like an e-commerce site, they change product information daily. And it may change every hour, maybe every 5 minutes, if you've got a real busy busy e-commerce site, still cache a query in those circumstances. If it's really running slow, if it's a query that takes a long time, if you've got a million products in there, caching the query for 2 seconds can help, especially if you've got a lot of traffic on that site. If you've got 100,000 visitors every hour, that means you've got so many visitors every second. And if for 2 seconds you can cache that query, not hit the database, that's 1,000 number of times you don't hit the database. So for 2 seconds, you know, during those 2 seconds, it's not likely the products will change. So during those 2 seconds, it can really help out. All right, we need to finish up for today. And now, if anybody has any questions or whatever, I'll stick around for a few minutes to answer anybody's questions. And thank you all for coming. No, it's not. If anybody needs the presentation, make sure to go to my website and grab the presentation and the code.
Can you flash your email address back up there?
Yeah. And anybody else who has any questions, my email address is right here. If anybody has any advanced SQL topics or has any questions or just wants to keep a brief, send me an email.
Thank you for listening, and we hope we will see you at CF United 2007. This has been a production by TerraTech Programming. For more information, go to www.cfunited.com.